think part of the value of these talks that I give, if there is any value, is to be very specific about pointing out dimensions of this core of what we do, which is called Zazen. And in pointing it out, it's not so much that anyone hearing is learning something new. It's just that it's validating something that you deeply already know about it. And I think that can be very helpful. So tonight I wanted to talk about an aspect of our practice that I think for me the best word to describe it would be intimacy, this aspect of intimacy. Now, one of the things that often will bring people to this particular practice, which, as we've said many times, is a practice without belief, without heavy reliance on ritual, magical thinking, really is about looking very clearly, directly, and intimately at the very center of oneself. What often brings people here is in the course of life having some expectation of intimacy have been violated. The way that Neil Young put it so wonderfully is only love can break your heart. I have a family member who actually had her heart broken a little while ago. And it caused me, you know, to think about it. This is not anything unique. We all have friends and family members, and we ourselves have had our hearts broken many, many times, I'm sure. I know I have. There's something that happens as a result of that. There's a great vulnerability when one opens their heart to someone else. And when that trust is in some way violated, and it doesn't have to be in a love relationship, it could be in a friend relationship, it can be in a social relationship. Some very deep pain results from that. And coming from that can be a reaction that hardens something inside, that hardens an identification with something. The identification may be painful. We may incorporate this sense that we're lacking something. That's why people don't love us. That's why we were rejected. That's why we were, our trust was violated, whatever. So we bang around in the world and we look for various solutions, and eventually nothing quite scratches the itch, particularly for people who are in this room. Nothing quite gets to the place where the lesion is, you might say. So we hear about a practice that involves going to the very center of oneself, going to the intimate, intimate center of oneself, underneath all ideas, all beliefs, all identifications. And as we start to dip our toe in it, we realize that this is what is actually scratching that itch. This is what's getting down to that level. Place where we want to go, the place where we always hope others can go with us. We can have a relationship like that. But as we do this practice, we realize that the essential thing is to have that in the deepest center of oneself. If you really, really have that, then you don't have to lean on others to give it to you. You know what it is. You know its flavor, you know its terrain, you know its quality. In fact, you can resonate with that part of someone else and bring it out of them. Give them what you always hope those others, with quotes around it, would give you. So, One of the students in this Sangha sent me an email and asked me a question, and this is once again relating to this intimacy. As a matter of fact, everything really about this practice is regarding intimacy. They said to me, can you shed some more light on this thing that you mentioned, a quote, and this quote is actually from the Diamond Sutra, and I'm going to read a little bit from the Diamond Sutra tonight. And he said, can you shed some light on the quote that goes like this? Develop a mind that abides nowhere. Develop a mind that abides nowhere. Now, the mind that abides somewhere is a mind, we'll go into what that means, that gets stuck on some identification, that becomes, in a sense, its object, something with characteristics, something walled off. And this often happens as a result of these hurts throughout life, these broken heart experiences, where we solidify around an idea of ourselves. Some of it may be very positive. Some of it may be positive as a defense, and some of it may be very painful. But it seems persistent and fixed, and therefore over a long period of time we begin to believe that this is what our mind is. This is what our core is. It's an entity walled off with characteristics. And now the Buddha comes and says, as a very essential teaching, and this Diamond Sutra is actually a profound, simple, direct, essential teaching in Buddhism, that is probably the core sutra in Zen Buddhism, this in the Heart Sutra. He says, develop a mind that abides nowhere. So, in answer to this student's question, I re-quoted it in a way that I think is even more accessible, and it's a beautiful way of putting this line. And it's been put this way, the Buddha said this. He said, allow mind, having no fixed abode, to flow forth. Now, I've quoted this many times, but it's always new when you hear it. Allow mind, having no fixed abode, to flow forth. Now, what is this mind with no fixed abode? And how do we find it? Now, I'll come right out and tell you. I won't make it a secret. This mind is the very essence of intimacy. Its very essence. People who've had awakening say that they feel that they've gone to the center of the universe. The center. He said, develop a mind that abides nowhere, and allow mind, so permit, in other words, don't create it, allow it, permit it. It's already that way. Allow mind, having no fixed abode, not identifying with a walled-off entity with characteristics, which is a false identity, which restricts us, which comes about from eons of hurt, misunderstanding, violation of trust, and all the other things, clinging to what we hope we want to make permanent but can't, rejecting all those things that are inevitable because of the results of karma, but we somehow believe some that through rejection we can make them go away. So I said, allow mind, allow this intimacy with no fixed attachment to an identification to flow forth from everything. So incense smell is intimate. The sound of the fan is intimate. The feeling of my folded legs is intimate, intimate. And this is exactly what Zazen is. It's allowing mind, having no fixed abode, to flow forth from every moment-by-moment experience in the posture of Zazen. done in all alertness, intentness, eyes half open, all senses working. Because the very entry of these sensory experiences is the source of this intimacy, this mind. Not getting in the way of it, not to be removed, not to abstract oneself into another land, but to see every single sensory experience occurring in your zazen as mind flowing forth, this intimacy of mind flowing forth. Now we get here by not abiding. So these sensations, these feelings, these smells, these thoughts, when we begin to name them and give them meaning and compare them and put them into various hierarchies, we are now taking these intimate sensations, really, and we're making them abide somewhere. Abide in a meaning. Abide in a value. I like it, I don't like it, it's right, it's wrong. Why did they say this? All the rest of it. So one of the things that we need to do, and I've mentioned this many times, is rather than oppose our thoughts, fight our thoughts, just simply perceive them immediately and directly as sensations. Thoughts are sensations. Peel the meaning off the thought by not being interested in it, because you're just taking a unique sensation done in this moment, and you're abiding it in something you made up, an idea, a meaning. And now, when we're able to do that, the thought, just like anything else, becomes an intimate sensation in this moment. Only I know it. As I've said before, when we peel the meaning off, when we don't have it abide in some fixed notion, when we see it as completed in each moment, then we are free to notice one thing about it, that it is, it appears. So thinking is, thinking appears. What is this appears? This is intimate. Things only appear in my center. If they're not already in my center, remember what the Buddha said, allow mind having no fixed abode, mind meaning intimacy. If they're not already in my center, then they don't appear. So the fact of their appearance is the proof of their intimacy. So in our zazen, we start with what actually is happening. The breath, count, koan we might be working on, shikantaza, which is the flow of our sensations from moment to moment. We let go of the meaning, so we allow the intimacy of it in each moment to flow forth. And we enter that. We actually point ourselves in that direction. This is a movement in a direction, in an intimate direction. So masters have called it turning the light of the mind in on itself. Going to the center of the universe, going to the core of yourself, going to the deepest part of your horror, if you want to call it that. It's this movement of intimacy, which is the very core, the very essence of zazen practice. So let me read a little bit from this sutra called the Diamond Sutra. I'm going to read just actually the first three, and these are very, very short. There's a couple of sections that set it all up. The Buddha was at a particular park, Deer Park, and he was accompanied by 1,250 bhikshus, so monks and nuns. And then this monk, Subhuti, makes a request of him to teach. So set up. And then this Sutra goes right to the heart immediately, right away. Section 3. So section 1 and 2 is just setting up the setting. In section 3, it goes right into it. And this is it. I mean, you could stop here. This would be all you need to know. This is it completely. The real teaching of the Great Way, that's the title of this section, and here's how the translation goes. And remember, Subhuti was the questioner. So Buddha said, Subhuti, all the bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, should discipline their thoughts as follows. All living creatures of whatever class, born from eggs, from wombs, from moisture, or by transformation, whether with form or without form, whether in a state of thinking or exempt from thought necessity, or wholly beyond all thought realms, all these are caused by me, and that's capitalized, to attain unbounded liberation, nirvana. Yet, when vast, uncountable, immeasurable numbers of beings have thus been liberated, verily no being has been liberated. Why is this, Subhuti? It is because no bodhisattva who is a real bodhisattva cherishes the idea of an ego entity, a personality, a being, or a separated individuality. So the Buddha's pointing directly at something. He describes all these varying living beings, living creatures of whatever class he describes them as, all the different forms in which this thing, this intimate thing called mind with a capital M, all the ways in which it appears, it's housed. And he says that all of these are caused by me. What me is he talking about? What me? What me do you go to in your deepest center when you do deep, intent, wholehearted zazen? All these are caused by me to attain unbounded liberation, nirvana. And yet, when all these so-called numberless beings have been thus liberated, verily no being has been liberated. Why? Because there is no separated ego entity, personality, being, no separated individuality. See this kind of intimacy. Where would you find this non-separated, unbounded nirvana me? Where would you find it? Where would you go to find it? Where outside might you find it? Now, later in this sutra, the Buddha makes a beautiful comment, which I won't read, but I'll just recite it. He says that one who seeks me in form, so now looking outside, one who seeks me, this me with a capital M, one who seeks me in form, one who hears me in sound, something like that, perverted are his steps upon the way, for he cannot see the Tathagata, which is a appellation of the Buddha, meaning one who has gone thus. So it's not in that direction. So I'm going to go to the very next section, short. This is the very next one. And contemplate this now as I read it from the standpoint of this no dividing line, essence, center of oneself, which, because it has no particularities, cannot be distinguished from anyone's center, that of an ant, that of a Buddha. And there's only one direction in which it can be found, and that's the direction we learn here, doing zazen. So it says here, and the title of this section is, and this is the very next one, even the most beneficent practices are relative. Interesting. Furthermore, Subhuti, in the practice of charity, a bodhisattva should be detached. That is to say, he should practice charity without regard to appearances, without regard to sound, odor, touch, flavor, or any quality. Subhuti, thus should the bodhisattva practice charity without attachment. Wherefore? In such a case, his merit is incalculable. Subhuti, what do you think? Can you measure all the space extending eastward? No, world honor one, I cannot. Then can you, Subhuti, measure all the space extending southward, westward, northward, or in any other direction, including the nadir and the zenith? No, world honor one, I cannot. Well, Subhuti, equally incalculable is the merit of the bodhisattva who practices charity without any attachment to appearances. Subhuti, bodhisattva should persevere one pointedly in this instruction. What is this charity? What does he mean by this? Without regard to appearances. How are we practicing charity when without getting stuck on particularities, stuck on the meaning of appearances, whether they're better or worse, higher or lower, right or wrong, all these things, including appearances within our body-mind during Zazen. How are we practicing charity when without regard to appearances we give ourselves totally, nothing held back? Is this not intimacy? It's kind of like a mother and child. The mother doesn't care what the child looks like. Every child to a mother is absolutely beautiful, perfect, wonderful. And there's no sense of charity. It's one connection. There's one non-divided reality there. And then I'll go to this last section here. This is the next one. Understanding the ultimate principle of reality. So you can see that this sutra goes right to the heart. It doesn't beat around the bush. Understanding the ultimate principle of reality. Subhuti, what do you think? Is the Tathagata to be recognized by some material characteristic? No, world-honored one, the Tathagata cannot be recognized by any material characteristic. Wherefore? Because the Tathagata has said that material characteristics are not, in fact, material characteristics. Buddha said, Subhuti, wheresoever material characteristics there is delusion. But whoso perceives that all characteristics are, in fact, no characteristics, perceives the Tathagata. Is this not mind flowing forth from each and everything? If we are involved with, entangled with, concerned with, dealing with, clinging to, rejecting the characteristics of anything, we are at that moment missing something. It's appearance. It's sheer appearance. And remember, appearance means in my center, in my center. He said, whosoever perceives that all characteristics are in fact no characteristics, we're seeing something essential about it. It's intimacy. It's intimacy perceives the Tathagata. The words are so simple and so direct that they are difficult from the standpoint of the intellect. So this is why we do Zazen, because the intellect alone, which is used to dividing things and looking at characteristics, can't quite get this. So what we have to do is start there and then turn the light of the mind in our Zazen and directly go there, enter this intimacy. It's the only way to really grasp the words and get what their true essential meaning is. Now, I think we have a little time for me to... I wanted also to read a koan from the Mumonkan, which also strangely deals with this intimacy. And it's very brief and very short. So, and it's a puzzling koan too. And really wonderful. So the title of this koan, it's number 17 from the Mumonkan. It's the national teacher calls three times. I want you to think about this too from the standpoint of intimacy and what the Buddha said about not identifying with characteristics. And this thing about charity without regard to characteristics. So this is the case. The national teacher, so in China and in Japan, they had national Zen teachers. They were so highly regarded that it would be like the Dalai Lama, that kind of thing. The national teacher called his attendant three times, and three times he answered. The national teacher said, "I thought I had transgressed against you, but you too have transgressed against me." Transgressed. Key here is, what is this word, transgressed? What does transgressed mean? Trans, across, gressed means a movement in a direction. A movement across a dividing line. When you transgress, you break a rule, cross a line in the sand. You might say invade someone's personal space, you transgress. Now I'll go back to this koan again. National teacher called his attendant three times. "Joe!" Three times he said, "Yes!" "Joe!" "Yes!" "Joe!" "Yes!" Three times he answered. The national teacher said, "I thought I had transgressed against you. You too have transgressed against me." How intimate is this encounter? How direct? If the student for a moment thought, "Wait a minute, you're not supposed to ask me three times. Wasn't in this moment, no ideas, no attachment to any characteristics, plunged into this present moment. Perhaps they had both been in a place like this doing zazen, in a samadhi state. And the teacher said, "I just want to be with my student." And the most direct way is, "Joe, yes, teacher. Joe, yes, teacher. Joe, yes." Ah, I transgressed against the divided off entity called you. And you too have transgressed against me. Oh, wonderful. Koan has a commentary and a verse. I won't go into the commentary. It's a little long, but I'll just read the verse. And this, you know, it's very puzzling. These koan, you have to very gradually grasp them, the language and what it's pointing at. So he says here, he, and this is referring really, I believe, to the student, he must carry the holeless, H-O-L-E-L-E-S-S, iron kang. A kang is like shackles. He must carry the holeless iron kang. And his descendants too can have no peace or rest. If you want to support the gate and sustain the house, you must climb a mountain of swords with bare feet. It's a really wonderful saying here. The holeless iron kang. No way to enter it, no gap in it. And it's made of iron, solid. In a sense, it feels like a burden, but remember, this practice is, in a way, imbecilic. We have to push ourselves into these spaces, push ourselves into this extremity, where thinking, analysis, appearances, none of these things, none of these qualities applies. There's no hole there. It's solid iron. Sometimes it's been described as an anvil hurtling through empty space. That intensity, that depth, that going beyond any idea, any thinking. So to do this practice, you must carry the holeless iron kang, go in that central direction, into the center. And his descendants too, he's talking about the teacher's descendant, but also all of us as descendants of the Buddha, can have no peace or rest. In other words, this is an endless process. This is an endless refinement. It doesn't come to an end at some point, I've done it, now I can go on to the next thing. This is, in a sense, a way of life. It's a deep commitment. It's a long-term commitment to this process of going to the center. If you want to support the gate and sustain the house, it's just a fancy way of saying, if you want to really support this house of Zen, meaning absorption, meaning awakening, meaning this whole Buddhist movement. You must climb a mountain of swords with bare feet. And this describes this. Joe, yes! It's this moment by moment, intense being involved in the actual experience. No intervening thinking. This is the space we enter. Climbing a mountain of swords with bare feet. Ouch, 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 moment by moment by moment. So this is the attitude of Zen. This is what brings us to this intimate center. So we've run out of time and we'll end there tonight.